This fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at minkycouture.com.
When it comes to showing appreciation, the gift you choose says everything. Minky Couture luxury blankets make the perfect statement. Soft, stylish, and unforgettable. Whether you're thanking a client, rewarding an employee, or celebrating a milestone, nothing delivers warmth and gratitude like a Minky blanket. With custom options and elegant packaging, your gift will stand out and be remembered long after the moment has passed. Make your corporate gifting extraordinary with Minky Couture, luxury you can feel. Visit minkycouture.com to get started.
Live on Era, presented by Ger Sweeney in association with emeraldconnection.net.
Good evening and welcome. Nice to have your company on this Monday evening, and welcome to Live on Era, the Irish programme, and going to be with you for the next hour. I have an interesting programme coming up. I think it's a nice programme. Do hope you can stay with me. I'll be talking to George Lee very shortly about some of the events that had Irish people talking back home. Now, some of the stories would have made international news, some didn't, and just a little selection of things that happened. Peter O'Dwyer will be talking to us about Brexit, and we know that things are happening and changing on an hourly and daily basis, but we'll get the latest. And I'll be talking to a lady by the name of Justine Hottie, who is from County Dublin originally, has been working in Spain in different parts for a long time, and she'll be talking to me about her current role in the Kempinski Hotel, which is not too far from Marbella and Estepona, also about her journey to where she is today. We'll have a look at some famous birthdays happening this week. There'll be a little bit of a history lesson, and we'll have some great Irish music in there as well. Now, as always, can I remind you that the contact details for the programme, ger@tre.radio, is the email address that will get me, the best one to always contact me on, ger@tre.radio. Now, something I want to tell you that's happening in the Benalmádena area. It's an information talk in English, and it's happening at the Innova Park, and that's in Arroyo de la Miel, which is not too far from Torremolinos and Benalmádena and Fuengirola. It's happening on Thursday of this week. It happens at 12 midday, and there will be specialists in several fields talking in relation to things like Brexit, Residencia, pensions, healthcare, and much more. So if you'd like to go along, it was Joanna from the town hall in Benalmádena that sent the information to me. I was hoping to talk to either herself or to Anna, the foreign residence counsellor, but unfortunately we just didn't manage to get together in the past week, so I said I'd give it a mention for you right now. You can find out more about that at benalmádena.es if you want to do that. All right, it's on Thursday at 12 o'clock in Arroyo. Now, some famous birthdays that are happening this week. Let's go firstly to today, and we say happy birthday to Brian O'Driscoll. Brian O'Driscoll, one of Ireland's finest rugby players ever, was born 40 years ago today. Happy birthday to him. To James Larkin, and I had forgotten. I knew, but I had kind of forgotten that he was born in Liverpool. James Larkin, of course, politician and trade unionist, very prominent in and around the early part of the 20th century in Ireland. He was born on this day back in 1876. Tomorrow, Eleanor McAvoy, singer, was born in Dublin in 1967, so she's 52. Happy birthday to Eleanor. We skip to Friday, the 25th of January, and a fellow by the name of Tomás McGilla, politician, born in Nina in County Tipperary in 1924. And Eamon Morrissey, wonderful actor, born in Dublin in 1943. Eamon, unfortunately, no longer with us, but people that would have been looking at things like Hall's Pictorial Weekly will remember him, and I remember him as well as a wonderful theatre actor and indeed TV actor. Sunday is the 27th of January, and Brian Downey, the former drummer with Thin Lizzy, was born in Dublin 68 years ago, 1951 he was born. Keith Wood, former Irish rugby player, born in Killaloe in County Clare in 1972, so he's 47 next Sunday. And broadcaster Joe Duffy, RTE Liveline presenter and TV presenter, born in Dublin 63 years ago. Happy birthday to Joe, born in 1956. So there we go, some of the famous birthdays for you this week. And as usual, we like to try and match the music with birthdays and historical events and things like like that. Firstly, let's take this lady. I think she's absolutely wonderful. She's got a lovely style about her. She's 52 years old tomorrow. So we say happy birthday to Eleanor McAvoy, born in Dublin. Here's a fabulous song that's called He Never Spoke Spanish to Me on Live On Era on Talk Radio Europe in association with EmeraldConnection.net.
I met him in old Mexico. He was laughing, sad and young, in a smoky room where no one could see. His favorite poets all agreed Spanish is a loving tongue, but he never spoke Spanish to me. He was born in Monterey. All the Christmas songs were sung, and Padre knew what he'd grow up to be. Saints and sinners all agree Spanish is a loving tongue, but he never spoke Spanish to me. Said if you're from Texas, woman, where's your boots and where's your gun? And I smiled and said I got guns no one could see. Well, we laughed at that, we both agreed Spanish is a loving tongue, but he never spoke Spanish to me. Left him in old Mexico. He was laughing, sad and young, in a smoky room where no one could see. His favorite poets all agreed Spanish is a loving tongue, but he never spoke Spanish to me. No, he never spoke Spanish to me.
There we go. That's Eleanor McAvoy celebrating her birthday tomorrow and a song called He Never Spoke Spanish to Me. Going to take a very quick break. Come back to me just after that. I'll be talking to George Lee about some of the things that happened that made people in Ireland talk during the week.
Live On Era, presented by Ger Sweeney in association with EmeraldConnection.net.
It's now time that we took a look at some of the stories that got Irish people talking during the week. Not necessarily the biggest stories to make international headlines, although some of them did. And George Lee is the man that takes a look at that, walks us and talks us through it. George, good to talk to you again on this Monday evening. Welcome.
I've decided I'm not doing it anymore, Ger.
The check never arrived. All right, it's going to be one of those Mondays, I reckon. Now, I know that you are sitting pretty this evening in the outskirts of Limerick City, the city where you and I were both born, and that's where we're going to start, because last week was the first anniversary of the death of Dolores O'Riordan, former lead singer with the Cranberries, and it was a week of celebration, in inverted commas.
It was, and it was a lovely week of celebration, Ger, because I think people remember Dolores with great fondness. And I suppose the way that her family have handled the bereavement over that period of time has also brought the city and the county of Limerick along with them. But the way in which it was handled this week by the people of Limerick was particularly nice.
Right.
Of course, Dolores died on the 15th of January in 2018. And here in Limerick, fans and musicians remembered their beloved singer at an event called Piano for Dolores. It was a special day-long event in Ormston House on Patrick Street, and it was wonderful. The venue was adorned with images of Dolores and the Cranberries and lyrics from some of their most famous songs. But the most poignant part of it all was that it was the simplicity of it. There was simply a piano there, and the piano was Dolores' favourite instrument. Oh. And this was the focal point of the whole day.
I didn't know that, about the piano being her favourite instrument.
Well, it was the one that she would have started out with, particularly in her days in Norley, Cloughter.
Okay, all right.
To mark the anniversary, the remaining band members, who of course were Mike and Noel Hogan and Fergal Lawler, they released the first single from the band's new album called In the End. Now, this will be the band's last album. Yeah. Dolores had completed and recorded the vocals to that final demo on 11 new songs which feature on the album in the weeks before her death. But interestingly as well, and it was a lovely, lovely touch from the University of Limerick, they also received honorary doctorates this week. And Eileen, who is everybody's favourite mammy in Limerick at this stage, posthumously received the honorary doctorate on behalf of Dolores, and said that Dolores would have been absolutely delighted to receive it from the University of Limerick.
I'm sure she would. And I was just thinking, as you were talking about Dolores, you know, people queuing up basically to, you know, pay homage to her during the week, and to be among people that were saying nice things. But you know, she was walking among us for years and years and just taken for granted, and now she's gone and nobody can see her anymore.
Very much so, Ger. And we spoke about Larry Gogan last week, and we mentioned that everybody had a Larry story.
Yeah.
And I suppose everybody in Limerick has a Dolores story as well. And mine is of being in a restaurant one night and going up to pay, which, as you know, isn't a very regular thing for me to do.
No. Yeah, have you pictures of that, by the way?
And I was waiting. There was a little glitch on the Visa machine, but there was another lady standing, and I identified her straight away as being Dolores, who was there with Eileen, actually, on the night. And I just turned to Dolores and I said, look, I'm not going to impinge on you. I just want you to know that all of Limerick is so proud of you and what you've done. And she turned to me and she just looked at me and she looked me straight in the eye and she said, thanks so much.
Aww.
That's lovely.
Yeah.
And it was so Dolores. Right. And it just showed how beautiful and simple the lady was.
Yeah.
And she really is a big loss to Limerick.
Indeed she is. A lady that is equally known in the country, but only in the last 12 months, is a Kilkenny woman, but living in the outskirts of Limerick, if I'm not mistaken. Vicky Phelan is her name, and Vicky exposed the cervical smear scandal in 2018 and has been working tirelessly, I would say, to bring this to the fore and make sure that it doesn't happen again. She had a cut off Leo Varadkar, Taoiseach, during the week.
She did, and just before we speak about that, I think it's timely that we would also remember a lady called Orla Church, who died on Saturday.
Oh, yeah.
And Orla was one of the ladies that campaigned so much for this cervical smear scandal as well, and she passed away on Saturday in Dublin.
Okay.
But yes, Vicky Phelan had a chop off Leo Varadkar, and she said, I think he is very much all talk and no action. And I don't get the sense that he thinks that this is important as what it really is, when you consider that half the population in this country are women and that every woman in this country has to have a smear.
Mm.
She did, however, praise Minister for Health Simon Harris for his efforts to improve screening standards and to provide better treatment for cervical cancer patients.
She actually came in for some stick because of her support or her words of praise for the health minister. But anyway, that's all in the past, as they say. Now, the Gardaí in Mallow in County Cork, they're delighted with themselves.
Absolutely. You could say they're on a high, Ger.
And we'll see why in a minute. Right.
We will indeed. They got more than they bargained for following an arrest for a road traffic offence. And community policing and day-to-day policing can be humdrum, particularly in a place like Mallow or in any small town around the country. But as part of the operation, they were seeking to identify people responsible for a spate of bike thefts.
Oh, really? Bicycles?
Bicycles. The guards had increased patrols in the Castle Park area of the town. Now, while on patrol in the early hours of last Sunday morning, officers stopped and searched a car. The driver was arrested and he was charged in relation to road traffic offences.
Right.
But as part of a follow-up operation, Gardaí carried out a search of a house in Maple Square, and they seized five bicycles believed to be among those recently stolen.
Ah.
But they got an additional surprise.
Right.
Suspected cannabis and cocaine with an estimated street value of over 3,000 euros was also seized.
They must have been absolutely thrilled, as you say, on a high. I remember many, many years ago, and I was studying marketing and public relations, and I cannot remember the man who was responsible for teaching it to me, but he was telling the class one time that the fast food restaurant Supermax, which was in its infancy in those days, was the only local fast food outlet in the world that was able to take on and beat McDonald's in their on their home turf. And that was kind of followed through again during the week when Supermax were in court, and there was a triumph for them.
Both you and I, suppose, have bumped into Pat McDonough on a number of occasions throughout our working life, and he's a very understated man, but a man that you don't mess with when it comes to business. He took on McDonald's for the use of its Big Mac trademark and to have that cancelled in Europe. And the judgment was handed down by the European Union Intellectual Property Office. And it said basically that McDonald's had not proven genuine use of its Big Mac trademark as a burger or as a restaurant. Supermax had taken the case against McDonald's after it was blocked from registering its name as a trademark in European countries outside of Ireland after an objection by McDonald's. Essentially, this case rested around use it or lose it. And McDonald's have stored up quite a lot of trademarks that they weren't using.
The young people of Ireland are going to be travelling on Interrail services across Europe in the coming 12 months. Tell us about that.
They are, and they're going to be doing it on a free basis because they were part of an award of free Interrail passes to travel around Europe. There was 2,366 Irish applicants, and the successful teams are going to join 14,500 others from across Europe who can travel around Europe by train for up to 30 days between the 15th of April and the 31st of October. What a wonderful addition that you would have.
Brilliant.
It's
brilliant.
Really the memories that will be made in that time.
Absolutely.
Will be superb.
Now, the High Court in Ireland, the Master of the High Court was in a little bit of bother last week.
Ah, well, Jeremy, we've all been there. You know, you get frustrated with them.
Sorry, we've all been where? The High Court? Speak for yourself.
We've all been in the place where Edmund Honohan is at one stage or other, where we just get so completely frustrated with bureaucracy that we take matters into our own hands.
Right,
mind
you,
we're not the master of the High Court, and we don't do it in the four courts, because if we did what he did, I'd say we would be in hot water.
Mm.
He took a hammer to four windows in his four courts courtroom. It took place in December, and he was, according to Honan, because the air in his court was stagnant and didn't offer those in the room a comfortable and reasonable atmosphere, something he said that he has a statutory obligation to ensure.
Oh, okay. And?
The glass panes, miraculously, were replaced, and Mr. Honan was reported by the media to be pleased with the outcome,
right,
as the windows could now be opened manually, where previously the window latches had been painted over. It's the small things in life.
A couple of things that I want to talk about as well. New rules adopted by the European Parliament aimed at making it easier for people who lose passports abroad. And that's something that we're always worried about when we travel.
Yeah, look, and again, we spoke about bureaucracy in the last story. And I suppose this is just another way of bypassing bureaucracy in some ways. These rules adopted by the European Parliament aim to make it easier for people whose passports are stolen, lost, or damaged when travelling outside the European Union to get temporary documents.
Okay.
Essentially what it means that you can go to any one of the consulates or the embassies of a European Union country and get them replaced in that way.
Okay, so if you're in a country that there isn't an Irish consulate or embassy, then you can go to, let's say, the French one or the German one or the Italian one, and they'll help you out.
They will, and they'll give you a temporary travelling document which will be valid for a maximum of 15 days and can be used to travel back home.
Oh, that's great. That's a lovely idea. There was a commemoration of something that we mark today, because the 21st of January 1919, 100 years ago today, the Civil War is said to have commenced. And the event, there were two events which happened on the day. One was the Dáil Éireann, the first sitting of the Dáil in the Mansion House in Dublin. And the other one was an ambush in Solihull Beg in County Tipperary.
Yes, and this is an era of Irish history that I have a particular interest in, Ger. This was a very understated ambush when it first happened. It simply was that there was a Gelignite being taken from Limerick Junction to Solihull Beg to a quarry.
Yeah.
and the IRA in the first action now that's recognised of the War of Independence raided that that horse and trap that was going along the road, and two constables, James MacDonald, who was a native of Belmullet in County Mayo, and Patrick O'Connell from Coachford in County Cork, were killed in that ambush. And sometimes, you know, you can look at history, allows us to look at things from every direction. It's also interesting to look at the commentary that there has been around this, and very tellingly, I suppose, the minister has looked at this, and the comment that she made was that today's or yesterday's commemoration in Salaghead Beg was for all who suffered and who lost their lives during the independence struggle.
Yeah.
And I think that is probably a mark of where we're going as a country, that we are now mature enough to look at things from all angles.
Indeed. And there will be a lot more about commemorations, I'm sure, over the next wee while. Now, that leads us on, sadly, to the next story and our final story. And you and I remember growing up in the 1980s and sitting and having our breakfast and listening to the radio when tragedies were happening on a daily basis and sometimes hourly basis in Northern Ireland. And on Saturday night in Derry, there was a car bomb detonated near the courts. And it kind of brought back awful memories, but it also fired a warning shot, didn't it?
It did. And again, yes, Ger, I do remember sitting and watching the TV news, and it almost became, we almost became immune to this.
It did.
It was happening 300 miles north of, you know, where we lived, but yet it impinged on so many lives. 3,000 lives were taken in those years. And this is something we cannot go back to as a nation, and this needs to be rooted out, root and branch, and we cannot allow this to ever become the norm again in this country. No. I think this should be a warning cry for the Assembly, which, you know, hasn't sat in so long at
2 years.
Point. And the fact that, you know, we have taken our eye off the ball in a lot of ways because of the whole Brexit controversy and the way in which Brexit has been handled. A lot of the domestic politics, a lot of the, you know, the politics around Northern Ireland, all of those issues have taken a backseat because of Brexit. And we can't allow that to happen.
All right. A fairly downbeat note to finish on, but George Lee, thank you very much indeed. We look forward to hearing what you come up with on the programme next Monday. Look forward to talking to you then. In the meantime, have a good week.
God bless, sir.
And let's remember Dolores that we started talking about at the start of this. Dolores O'Riordan and the Cranberries.
There was a game we used to play. We would hit the town on Friday night, stay in bed on till Sunday. We used to be so free. We were living for the love we had, living not for reality. Just my imagination, just my imagination, just my imagination. It was.
Dolores O'Riordan and the Cranberries, and a song that's called Just My Imagination. Going to take a very quick break. Just after that, I will be talking to Justine Huhy.
Live on Air, presented by Ger Sweeney in association with EmeraldConnection.net.
Welcome back. From time to time, I get the names of Irish people that are living in and around our catchment area, and I like to find out a little bit about them. And I was given a name, Justine Huhy, some weeks ago by Roger Comiskey, who came into contact with Justine at an event at the Kempinski Hotel. And he said, you should talk to this lady. She's bright and she's intelligent. She's Irish. The listeners would love her. And I think you will. I went along to meet her and I started asking about how she got into the business, but where she got the whole Spanish bug and what she was doing and how she did it.
Well, I was studying at university and one of the modules was Spanish. And I'd spent some time in the north of Spain in Asturias during those 4 years over in London while I was studying. And I basically felt that I really wanted to come back to Spain to complete my knowledge of the Spanish language and culture, etc. And the idea was initially for just 1 year. And here I find myself almost 19 years later, still here.
Now, you started by saying that you were in college, but you were in college in London.
Yes.
So tell us where you were and what you were studying and why did you go to London?
I was at Roehampton Institute, which forms part of Surrey University, and I basically wanted to have a change and to move and see more things and get out and about. I was a bit impatient, as one could say, when I was growing up. I really wanted to jump the gun and have everything, you know, see the world, travel, whatever, and just experience something different. And I thought the whole idea of going to university would be to get away from what I was typically surrounded by. And obviously growing up in Dublin, choices of universities in Dublin, absolutely incredible, but the majority of people stayed at home, and I think there was the big kind of feeling of wanting to really be part of a university lifestyle and community. So that's why I headed over towards London. London obviously was easier those days for connection reasons. I mean, had offers from other universities around the UK, but some of them were so far out in various locations that it wasn't easy to get to from Dublin. So we settled for London as a fantastic, well, amazing location. It was an incredible 4 years as well, but topped off with the visit to Spain, to Asturias, to Oviedo, where I spent a number of months studying Spanish at the University of Oviedo, and it was with part of the Erasmus scheme. It was fantastic. So that gave me my passion for Spain and really wanting to come back. And then when I graduated, went back to Ireland and decided, you know, like, time to clear the university loan, student loan, etc. Got a job with Dell Computers, had a fantastic year with them in their telemarketing team, where I think a lot of graduates from around various universities and colleges in Ireland and so on, and began their first career, their first jobs. I think I was a bit impatient again. So I started looking for jobs back in Spain. I really wanted to come back to Spain. There was something about it that was calling me back here. I looked at Madrid, Barcelona, the big cities, and it was difficult because even for, you know, young graduates from the Spanish universities, they found it difficult to get jobs and get their foot on the ladder. So I widened the search, and basically a real estate position came up here in this area down here in Marbella. Real estate agency is no longer operational. But I joined them and I was with them for a number of years, and it basically began my life here in this area.
And you settled into the lifestyle, you settled into meeting with people and getting to know people, because if you were dealing with real estate, you were dealing with Irish and English and German and French probably, and a whole range of people. So yeah. Your people skills were honed.
Yes, they were. Yes. I actually dealt with a lot of the Irish people that were looking to purchase properties in this area. So that was mainly, I think, one of the reasons why the real estate agency at the time were looking particularly to employ a young Irish person. And I was the first person that they found outside the local area. It was difficult. It was a very different work process to what I was used to in Dell, but you know, you adapt. Yeah, I basically then started doing the exhibitions, and I'd go back to the UK and go back to Ireland a lot. Used to get home to see mum and everything. I stayed within that industry for a number of years. I then went on to work for McInerney's, who were out here, that were part of Alanda Homes, and I really thoroughly enjoyed working with them. It was fantastic.
And how did you end up then in a fabulous hotel like the Kempinski?
Oh gosh, long stories. Well, I suppose marketing people make friends within their industry, and I made a very good friend who actually is still one of my best friends today. She works within marketing as well, and I was at the time, after the real estate and development side of things took a dive here, I worked for an insurance company doing their marketing. Yet again, very happy. However, insurance is limited in what you can do marketing wise. It's not very creative or exciting at times. So she'd heard that there was a position going here. The general manager at the time was looking for a native English speaking person to come in and take over the website, the marketing, to basically see things more from a customer's point, a client's point of view, a guest's point of view, less than, you know, from the hotel side of things. And I have actually very little hotel experience. So therefore, he really liked the fact that I saw everything like a guest would instead as a hotelier. I think that appealed to them because I was asking questions like, well, why do you call it that? Because that makes no sense to a person that isn't within the industry. So, you know, made some basic changes, which we basically helped to improve the guest experience here at the hotel.
And your guests, where are they from predominantly?
The UK is still our largest market, hotly followed obviously by Germany, because Germany with the Kempinski name, etc., it's very powerful in Germany. And after that, then I would say the Spanish market is growing. It's fantastic to see the Spanish market growing at such a rate year on year. We have a very good connection now with the USA. We're getting more and more clients from the USA, and naturally the Irish market. We have quite a lot of Irish clients, and I often see that when people visit our website, you know, with our Google Analytics and so on from Ireland, they tend to convert a lot more quickly. They tend to book. So I see a very good ratio of visitors from Ireland looking to come and stay with us. And I think they enjoy the hotel. I think they enjoy the friendliness of the hotel, the services, and everything that we have to offer here.
And what's your personal interaction with guests, or is there one? Or if you know that there's somebody coming from Ireland, do you make a point of trying to meet them?
We treat everybody exactly the same, which is fantastic. I do understand what you're saying. That yeah, I tend to not interrupt too much. But if I see an Irish name on the rooming list, I will mention it every now and then. And then we're like, oh, they're from Ireland. That's from my country, etc. I have more contact in the PR side of things when we're hosting events here, the art events, the music events, which we'll be hosting now in 2019. I've met more and more Irish people through those the events that we hosted in 2018. People who are very keen. And I find the Irish community down here, there's a certain group of us that are very keen to promote the arts. And they're very, very positive whenever I'm trying to bring artists in or to host exhibitions and so on. So I'm finding a lot of support from that community. And also, again, yes, with the expat community, also with a lot of people from the UK are also very interested in what we're doing here at the moment with the arts.
I can't interview you or talk to you when you mention that the UK is your biggest market without mentioning the B word. And what, okay, none of us at this stage have a clue what's going to happen, but you've obviously been thinking about it, and what's your thought on it?
It doesn't really necessarily fall into my remit too much, but the sales team, etc., we have a plan B in place, and that's the brace. We would be very disappointed and upset to lose the UK market, and we will see a downturn in the amount of bookings. Normally in January, we have a flood of bookings from the UK and Ireland. It is happening. It's probably not as fast a pace as it has in other years. We are actually more positive now, I think, than we were late November, early December. So fingers crossed that we'll still welcome the market back, because they're hugely important to us, like all guests.
Interesting to hear you say you've got a plan B when we know that Theresa May doesn't at the minute, but we'll have more about that later. All right, in relation to the events that you mentioned there in 2018, what type of events did you run? And I know that you've got something coming up later this month that features somebody from Ireland, but first, what kind of things do you generally do?
Well, we have a fantastic space here. We actually have two art galleries, and one is a dedicated small space, which is really very lovely for particular exhibitions, etc., and we can host that exhibition then for maybe 6 to 8 weeks. And then there is a larger area which is called the Art Foyer, and we can host very nice inaugurations of art events there with a cocktail, etc. There's plenty of space. So last year I focused mainly on bringing some artists from Madrid, etc. They came through an agency which helped me set up, because I hadn't done this before and I wasn't too sure what way it would go. We had a very successful event, which then led us on to another event, which we hosted in November, where we still have the art on display. It was Brian Travis from UB40 and John Ilsley from Dire Straits. They have both been artists for a very long time. In fact, Brian Travis studied art before he moved into music. And John Ilsley now has found himself drawing and painting again, etc. As you know, he's still in the recording studio, but he has more time to dedicate to art. And we had an incredible inauguration night. The two artists came along. We had a lovely interview with them, with a kind of you know, a personal audience with. And afterwards, a bit of a party. Yeah, so it was a great evening.
On the 24th of January, you have a classical evening here, and you're featuring a young man from Ireland called Bill O'Brien. He's Waterford, as far as I know, a soloist, pianist, and he's starting to make waves.
I'm very excited about that. To have somebody of this standard to be able to come to our hotel and play a concert with us is incredible. I'm very excited about it. It's going to be a beautiful evening, because where we're going to place the piano will be surrounded by the art we have. On top of that, then, also really, it's only going to be limited to about 40 tickets, because I don't want to cram the space out. It'll be a very intimate evening. You'll be able to speak to Billy afterwards as well, and have, you know, a time to talk to him, etc., and get to know him as a person. And I think it's going to be a big hit, actually, for those who do come.
Moving back to yourself, there are two questions that I'm sure you're asked on a continuous basis, or constantly, and I'm going to join the queue. The first one is, do you miss home?
I do. I do miss home. Although Spain has become my home, you know, when I do go home, I instantly feel at ease and so on. It's the small things. It being back at Dunleary is an amazing place now. You know, how the People's Park and so on in around Dunleary, how fantastic it is at the weekends, and the lovely atmosphere. And then obviously, you know, just the ease of jumping onto the Dart and heading into town, and all the changes that have taken place in around the city. And I do. I like going home. I've brought my little boy home. He's 2.5 now. He's half Irish. He will know his roots. He will know where he comes from. I didn't enjoy the 3-hour flight, I tell you. And I don't think the chap beside me, or in front of me, or behind me did either. But yes, yeah, so it's very important that I go home as often as possible. I'll go home more often now he's a bit older and a bit better behaved.
This is not the second question, but just as you speak about Ireland, are you a little bit more, is one a little bit more Irish when they're living away from home than they are when they're at home?
I can be. I think my poor partner, he's constantly getting it in the ear about, you know, how fantastic so-and-so is and that is, and you know, rugby and St. Patrick's Day for me, although it's not a big party, it's something that I always, you know, pay a lot of attention to and make sure it's done right and the Guinness has to be served correctly, etc., and so on and so forth. So very, very important.
All right, here is the second question. Justine Haughey is your name. And for listeners, because it's not television, she just said, oh yeah. Are you related to Charlie Haughey?
No. I'm very sorry to disappoint you all, but family are from Lurgan, up north, no connection whatsoever. Haughey is a very, very popular name in the town of Lurgan, so no. though it has been handy over the years, and it certainly stands out, and people tend not to forget me. People from home tend not to forget me. However, people here in Spain can't pronounce it at all. They can't pronounce Justine either, so I guess... I won't tell you how they pronounce it here, but I don't think it's the correct thing to say on the radio.
All right, well listen, Justine, who's not one of the real Haugheys. Justine Haughey, thank you so much for talking to me. It's been lovely. I like to catch up with Irish people when I can, just to find out what their story is. And you have a great old story. I'm glad that you're so happy in Spain. Will you ever go home for good?
I sometimes say to my partner, I think we will, but I would have to pack up all the Spanish wine. He has a wine shop. And I would also have to find a space, I think, for several horses and so on. Those would be the key things I'd like to take back to Ireland from here. But I do miss home sometimes, and maybe one day I will go back.
Justine, thank you for talking to us, and we wish you well. Continued success in all that you do here in Kempinski, and indeed at home and abroad and all sorts of places. Lovely talking to you.
Thank you very much, dear. Thanks.
Yeah. Looking back on the track for a little green bag. Gotta find just the kind, or I'm losing my mind. Out of sight in the night, out of sight in the day. Looking back on the track.
looking upstairs, looking behind, looking for some happiness, but there is only loneliness to find. Turn to the left, turn to the right, looking upstairs.
First time I heard that song, I didn't realise it was Joe Dolan, but it is Joe Dolan, and a song from the late 1960s, early 70s called Little Green Bag. Right, we're going to take a very quick break. We have a little history lesson on the way. Of course, Peter O'Dwyer will be talking to us as well, and we'll have some more music. Please don't go anywhere.
Live on Era, presented by Ger Sweeney in association with EmeraldConnection.net.
Welcome back to the programme, the final part of the programme, and we're going to take a look at some of the events that happened on this week down through the years, and we're going to start with today, the 21st of January. If you were listening earlier and when I was talking to George Lee, you would have heard us talk about 1919 and the start of the War of Independence. 1919, on this day, Dáil Éireann, chaired by Sean T. O'Kelly, met for the very first time at the Mansion House in Dublin. As part of this meeting, the adoption of the ritual of the turning of the seal, establishing the sovereignty of the Irish Republic, was begun. Also, two members of the RIC, the Royal Irish Constabulary, were shot dead by Irish volunteers, including Sean Tracy and Dan Breen, in an ambush at Solobhead Beg in County Tipperary, and as I said, regarded as the very first incident in the War of Independence. Tomorrow, Tuesday, the 22nd of January 1972, the Republic of Ireland signed a treaty of accession to the European Economic Community, the EEC. 1998, it was announced that up to 1 million ounces of high-grade gold had been discovered in a mine in County Monaghan that would result in the country's biggest ever gold mine going into production 2 years later. I don't know whatever became of that. I must have a look and find out. It was on the 22nd of January 2011 that Brian Cowan resigned the leadership of the Fianna Fáil party, which was governing at the time, but he remained Taoiseach. But that was only to be short-lived. Wednesday, the 23rd of January 1898, on that day, the United Irish League, a nationalist electoral organisation, was founded by William O'Brien. On Thursday, the 24th, we mark the death of piper and folklorist Willie Clancy from Milltown Malbay in County Clare. He died on that day in 1973. And of course, you have the Willie Clancy Summer School, which is a week-long or a 10-day-long event in Milltown Malbay, where you have young people and old people from around the country and around the world coming to play music and to study and go to different workshops and so on in the memory of Willie Clancy. 1974, the official Unionist Party was founded. Saturday, the 26th of January. Back in the year 2000, Taoiseach Mary Harney announced that the new minimum pay rate of £4.40 per hour would apply from the 1st of April as well. Supporters of ancient herbal remedies staged a wake in Dublin, mourning the death of the free availability of the herb St. John's Wort. Many people would have heard of that and used it as remedies down through the years. Anyway, it could only now be obtained on prescription. And in 2011, Micheál Martin was elected leader of the Fianna Fáil party. Of course, that's following the resignation of Brian Cowan a couple of days earlier on the 22nd. And finally, the 27th of January, next Sunday, 1885, Charles Stewart Parnell turned the first sod for the West Clare Railway. Just some of the events that happened down through the years in the coming week that I thought you might be interested in. It is time to talk Brexit and Ireland. A little earlier on today, just before lunchtime, I spoke with the senior business reporter for the Times Ireland. That is Peter O'Dwyer, who joins us pretty much on a weekly basis. Peter, nice to talk to you again.
Thanks, sure.
Whatever comes out of the Commons today, the reaction from Ireland won't actually be formulated really properly until about 8 or 9 o'clock this evening.
There's no sign that there's going to be a particularly major move from Theresa May. She has decided, by all accounts, that she's going to scrap plans for getting cross-party support because she's blaming Jeremy Corbyn for not engaging. Jeremy Corbyn's blaming her for refusing to rule out a no deal. So she's going to focus on trying to win over the rebels within her own party and the DUP. So obviously her efforts in that regard is going to once again be focused on the backstop. There's been two ideas that have been floated in the media over the last couple of days in that regard. The first of which was that the UK was going to look at negotiating bilaterally with Ireland as opposed to with the EU as a whole.
Yeah.
Now, that smacks a small bit of desperation because that has been ruled out from the very start of this process. It has always been said that the EU will negotiate and will decide as a bloc. And surprise, surprise, this morning on Irish Radio on RTE, Helen McAtee, who's the European minister, said that that absolutely wasn't a runner, that Ireland wouldn't negotiate unilaterally. Mairead McGuinness, the Irish MEP, also shot it down, said it was not an option.
Okay. And the second idea, I think, sent shivers down the spines of many people in Ireland when it was reported in the UK this morning that they were looking at renegotiating some parts of the Anglo-Irish agreement.
The Daily Telegraph reported that Theresa May was considering renegotiating part of the Good Friday Agreement as a means of solving the Brexit impasse. Essentially, the suggestion seems to be that you could rewrite part of that agreement, which obviously brought peace to this island, and insert a clause or insert some wording that would essentially replace the backstop. So you would give a guarantee within the context of Good Friday Agreement to say that the UK was committed to not having a hard border on the island of Ireland. That would get it out of the withdrawal agreement. That would decontaminate that. Mm-hmm. And you could get that over the line. That can't be unilaterally renegotiated.
Agreement.
It's an international peace agreement. It just can't be done. Or it can't be done unilaterally, I mean. And Leo Varadkar's spokesman was talking over the weekend and saying that the backstop is completely non-negotiable. And he was referencing the terrible car bomb that exploded in Derry over the weekend. Now, thankfully, nobody was injured. Nobody was killed in that. But he was saying that that was a sober reminder of the past, the quite recent past that we've had on this island, and that it reinforces, I suppose, the importance of the backstop. That if these sort of elements already exist, albeit in a very small minority in Northern Ireland, that putting infrastructure along the border again could cause serious trouble.
I know that finance and business is your brief, really, more so than anything else. But after that explosion, has there been conversation between you and your colleagues in relation to the link that might exist between the Brexit negotiations and the car bomb? Or was it purely, as was suggested a little earlier on, was it linked to the 100th anniversary of the first shots being fired in the War of Independence?
I think it's probably more likely the latter. And Mark Hamilton, who's the Assistant Chief Constable of the PSNI, was basically saying that, not to downplay the seriousness of this in anyway, but maybe to downplay the what level of representation these four people who are being held, saying that, yes, these guys exist, but they're very small. They're a tiny minority of people who have rejected peace on the island and that they're not representative of the community. I think Leo Varadkar connected the two, not to say that the bomb was in response to Brexit, but just to illustrate the fragile nature of peace, I suppose, on the island, of what could happen if you're going to put border checks back along that border.
All right. I'm going to ask you to gaze into the new crystal ball that you got for Christmas and tell us what you think is going to happen in the next week.
There's some talk that Theresa May's best option may be in the fact that there is a group of MPs who are looking to put down amendments that will be voted on in Parliament. And one of those would be to state that if by the end of next month she hasn't gained approval for her deal, whatever shape that'll be at that time, that Brexit would be postponed until the end of the year. You had the likes of Jacob Rees-Mogg, even, who's the arch-Brexiteer, saying that even Mrs. May's deal would be worse than no Brexit. So there's a line of thinking that perhaps the hardline Brexiteers, the rebels within her own party, if they see those sort of amendments as a potential to scupper Brexit in total, at least until the end of the year,
right,
that some of them, enough of them, might just fall into line. That seems to be her best guess.
All right. Peter O'Dwyer, Senior Business Reporter with The Times Ireland. Thank you for your analysis of what's happening between Ireland and Brexit and the UK and EU at the moment. And we look forward to chatting to you next week on the programme.
Thanks, Ger. Speak then.
And with that, I'm going to say goodbye for another week. I hope that you enjoyed it as much as I enjoyed putting it together. Don't forget the contact details. Ger, G-E-R, at tre.radio is the email address. Also, if you know about a St. Patrick's Day celebration, please let me know, because we want to do as much coverage as we can on what's happening in relation to St. Patrick's Day. And we know a certain amount of what's happening in Spain, but don't assume that we know, particularly if there's little parts of Spain out of the way or other parts of the world that you you know something is going on in, let me know, please. Ger, G-E-R at T-R-E dot radio. And I know it's almost 2 months away, but it will be on top of us very, very quickly. Thank you, as always, to our Spanish-Irish cultural consultant. That is Jose Antonio Sierra. And he's working on some stuff for St. Patrick's Day for us. I know he is. So we'll find out more very soon about that. Thank you for listening. And thank you to my guests today as well. Got to leave you with this song from the Thin Lizzy group, because as I told you a little earlier on, Brian Downey, the drummer with Thin Lizzy, celebrates his 68th birthday next Sunday. So we'll do this by way of saying happy birthday to Brian. So until next week, from me, Ger Sweeney, and all the crew here at Live On Era, thank you for listening. Look after yourselves and each other in the coming week, and I'll see you next Monday. Bye bye now.
Sweeney presents Live On Era in association with EmeraldConnection.net.